Chapter 29. Unification. Tears were still running down my cheeks. What a glorious, sad end my story had come to. Chenrogejes had driven the people from Alpha Vol and united the three kingdoms of Aramaria, Samogitia and Alsatianaya against the Gajans. In the process, he, as the last of my three protagonists, my heroes, had lost his life, as had Joliot and Amarok before. So it was true, in everything great, epochal, there was also sorrow and pain. Every end required sacrifice in order to achieve victory. This end had now come. The end of the Vulpes Lupus Canis. The end of my own world. The end of everything. Of me. Visibly moved, my psychologist looked at me and sighed wordlessly. What could he say? Switch it off, I ordered, and he understood immediately. Agreeing to my request, he pressed a button on the dictation machine, which ended the recording. Now everything was said, captured in spoken form and ready to be processed further. What do you want to do with this pointless stuff now? I asked hoarsely, wiping away my tears. The psychologist cleared his throat. Well, I will follow your idea, Mr. Gajes, I will type it up and make it into a book. But don't tell me that all this is pointless. It's your story, after all. And you may be proud of it. Maybe, I said, but it's over now. And whether anyone has heard it, will read it, who knows? Surely hardly anyone can do anything with it. What do people understand about values? Maybe they can never look behind the facade of a fantasy story and see the philosophical truths in them. The man nodded, they've always known how to hide their light under a bushel. I think you've told a very nice story that will inspire one or two others. I thought for a moment and turned my gaze to the white wall in front of my bed. I have always tried to convince others of my feelings and values, I said. And also, I have always hoped to inspire the people who surrounded me with my version of reality. Eventually, in the process, I found the meaning of life for me, aspiration, the pursuit of everything. Aspiration? Yes, aspiration in the form of imbibing knowledge and insights. Aspiration is directly opposite to inspiration. Those two things were what I really wanted in life. Well, besides infinite love with rose-colored glasses, of course. My heart never belonged to a person, but always to this dog, if I'm honest with myself. I see, the elder said, pausing briefly and changing the subject. I've been asking myself a question for a while. Ephraim told Arya they were equal to humans, or even superior. Ephraim gave the anthro beings hands so they would be able to take on humans. Yeah, so? The establishment of a civilization and the construction of the spaceship could only happen because of the presence of hands. If anthros were capable of space travel, why did you let the Earthlings come to Alpha Vol and not set out for Gaja yourself? Surely you could have kept the war with the Earthlings off your world. Although I sighed, it didn't take me long to come up with an explanation for my actions. It's quite simple. Due to the internal conflict between wolves and foxes, the main nations of the planet were already rubbing each other up. To build a whole fleet of spaceships, that would have been unimaginable. Besides, my creatures were on their own terrain. I imagined less chances for them, if they had entered the Earth. They could have overrun Gaja, which would have put me in danger myself. The questioner nodded in agreement. But Ephraim, this god. Did he and his brothers exist or not? I grinned, no. This is a simplification that was handed down to my beings. What makes my beings equal to humans is the fact that at some point they also forgot where they came from. You may have noticed, however, that the outcast god had blonde hair. Why do you think? The answer was not difficult for the psychologist. Ah, that was you, right? So you were a part of your own book and the history of the creation of the world from the very beginning. I nodded, which elicited an enlightened expression on his face. I wouldn't have connected it that way at all, he spoke. I can already tell, I will certainly have to go through the work more than once to understand everything. He got up from his chair and put his hand on my shoulder. I looked at him and was already wondering what clever saying would come now. Whatever the next time will be for you and what will become of your story, I enjoyed listening to you very much. I was fascinated by all of it, although I have to admit that I didn't understand everything right away. Many things only became clear towards the end. I knew from our first appointment how complicated things were in your mind. I sighed loudly, it's not as complicated as you think. This story is merely complex. That's all. I told every person I was around who got close enough to me that it wasn't going to be easy with me. For me, it was infinitely harder to find a balance between that reality and mine. The old man thought recognizably, he grabbed his bearded chin and allowed him escaped. Go ahead and say it. I'm a little crazy, aren't I? I flattened and grinned. But the man replied, not at all. You already said that life is always striving? Yours was striving to find that balance between the worlds. I must say that you seem to have succeeded. After all, with all the turmoil that came with it, you never caused any harm to another person. On the contrary, in the case of the apartment fire, you even saved some of them. For someone who always told me how much he hated people, not so bad. Pa, I spoke deprecatingly, I have never done anything to people, but I have done something to my children. Listen to the recordings. Then you will see how cruel I can be. I killed Joliad, Amarok, and Chenra, and I can only hope that in their minds they understood that it had to be able to finish with everything. I will have to listen to the material, as I said, a few times. In some places I can still see myself sitting in a corner questioning, while others are very clear. Get some sleep. I imagine the last few hours have been very stressful for you. We'll talk about it conclusively tomorrow around dinner time. I confirmed, yeah, I'm pretty beat, you could say that. I'm insanely tired. But when you leave, please tell one of the nurses to bring me some pain medication. Wordlessly, the man gently squeezed my shoulder with his hand and nodded. He was very collegial and I could be sure that he would do what I asked. When he had left the room, I turned on the television. I needed to get my mind off things. My stomach was hurting badly again, and to make matters worse, I was now psychologically very upset. No one before had I ever told so much about myself in my fictional world. No one had ever heard so much truth from me. I was not sure if the psychologist, who was only supposed to prepare me for the death that was soon to come, had understood everything. But why should I test him, ask him for details or even unravel more content of the story? He now had everything on tape and now it was up to him to make something out of it. I suspected that I would not live to see this, but I was satisfied that someone was now carrying this information. Had I inspired him or just talked him up? I decided to watch the news. I wasn't interested in all the other garbage that was on anyway. One reported about the upcoming solar eclipse, tomorrow about 12 o'clock it should become completely dark in our latitudes for a few minutes. I had already experienced two partial eclipses, but never a total one. And I was lucky, because if it would be around noon, I should be able to observe the spectacle from my window, after all, it was facing east. The excitement is building. In a good 17 hours, most people in Europe will be able to admire the first total solar eclipse in decades. The weather promises clear visibility and the supplies of protective glasses are already almost exhausted, it sounded from the TV. Yes, I would experience it, even if it was the last thing I did. How fitting, I thought, looking back inwardly to my life story. My musing was interrupted because someone knocked on the door. Come in, I shouted and turned off the TV again when a nurse entered the room. She had a small cup of pills in one hand and a water bottle in the other. Hello, Mr. Gajays, she said, how are you today? Are you in much pain? Of course. But I know that won't last too much longer, I grumbled. Shocked, the elderly lady looked at me and handed me the medication. Don't say that, Mr. Gajays, she said. But I only replied that it would not matter whether in a week or in a month, I would die, of which I was absolutely aware. Death, I said, was a redemption. And only the gods would know when it was time for me. I deliberately said gods because, after all, there were several of them in my world. Yes, but aren't you looking forward to your visit tomorrow morning? The lady asked in surprise. Sure I do, I relented, flushing down pills. That might bring some variety. I don't want to sound depressed, but it's been a long day. She just grinned and said, that's better. Now get some sleep, Mr. Gajays. You're always saying you're like a kecker and want to hang on. She mispronounced the title of my protagonist, which I just couldn't let stand, you mean Kesar. Ketschar. Yes, sometimes I am one. At least I'd like to be. Yeah, whatever. You're strong and you're hanging in there. That's the most important thing. The nurse walked out of the room, simply ignoring my correction. It was fascinating how life worked for ordinary people when they didn't think about it. One did everything the way one had always done it. What one did not understand could sometimes simply be ignored if one had the impression that dealing with it would be a waste of time. But she was right, I had persevered, despite all the pain and psychological problems. In fact, I could look forward to receiving visits from my relatives. Who knew how much longer it would be possible for me to see them? And the woman was right about another thing, I needed to sleep. Because those pills were making me even more tired than I already was. Oh, boy, was I suddenly exhausted. The next morning I opened my eyes and, I was still alive. The sleep was dreamless and I felt very relieved after the long therapy appointment yesterday. I knew that if you didn't dream, you had no unfinished business, no unfulfilled desires. I felt no pain, the weather was good, and my visit would come soon. After a morning wash by a male nurse and a toilet visit, I lay down in bed again. That is, I was put in, parked, so to speak. After all, one could not take special care of an almost immobile complainer. I had understanding for this, since there had to be harder cases than I was one. There were always worse versions of life than my own. It was always important to me that people accepted my version, believed it and let me live with it in peace, as long as I wanted to and could. So there I was again, alone in this bed, in this room. My story was now told, over, and the room turned back into the desolate wasteland it had been before. It seemed interesting, however, I had set out then to write a book that would end as it had begun. And it fit. I was alone in this sterile room, looking up at the ceiling so that I couldn't see anything out of the corner of my eye. So it seemed as if I was looking into a pure, white infinity that I could almost have touched. For a moment I thought and mused, the only truth of the world is in its silence. I smiled as the lyrics of a verse of a song I had made up for my book came to mind. The Song of the Freedom of the Peoples. Born to walk upright. In the life you live. Until you die. And in the end you will understand. We go together into the sun. Chenra, I love you so much. And of all that was. And what will ever be. Are the only thing, which ever remained to me. The melody played in my head and made me listen silently. Then someone timidly knocked on the door and I exclaimed out, startled, "Come in." It was my mother and my three sisters who came to visit me. Joyfully, they all came up to my bed and called out, "Hey, how are you? How's the art?" And things like that. Platitudes I knew nothing to do with, since I had always disapproved of meaningless banter. I countered curtly, "Yes, good, good. Everything as usual. Nothing new." They embraced me one after the other, and although I reciprocated, I didn't know what they actually felt. What was it supposed to make you feel? Joy? Love? Happiness? Security? Family things? But no, none of that was for me. Even today, I belong to those who found it easier to love others than to feel loved. To love someone, that was easy. To feel that one was loved, appreciated and respected, without restrictions or conditions, that has always been far from me. My mother had brought a bouquet of flowers and, smiling, placed it in the empty vase on my bedside console. "Oh yes, there are flowers," I said deprecatingly, indicating to her that anything green would only wilt with me anyway. "They'll die, you know that for sure." How was I supposed to take care of it? I couldn't even take care of myself anymore. "Let me," was all she said, "you might as well make yourself more comfortable here when your family is already visiting." She was right, after all, someone didn't come by every day. I also didn't want to appear too bitter or melt into self-pity. So I thanked her curtly while my sisters brought chairs to the bed and sat down. We talked about everyday things, how were acquaintances doing, what were friends doing, who had experienced which drama. Although I explained that the big therapy talk was now behind me, I did not mention what its content was. I merely stated that it was quite nice. I could tell they were trying not to seem too sad about the certainty of my imminent demise. They were able to conceal their emotions somewhat, but not to switch them off completely. It was easy for me, with my sensitive social antennas, to pay attention to every little sign that someone was sending out. I noticed that they would have loved to start crying. I wasn't particularly comfortable either, especially since I knew what I looked like, as pale as a ghost, sunken and fragile. "You look really bad," my oldest sister said seriously and sighed. "Yes, I know," I confirmed, "but I'm glad you can't see the tumor. Don't want to die too ugly." "Why would you say that?" my mother asked in exasperation, wiping rising tears from her eyes. I explained to her that I was a realist and consciously approached my death. It was inevitable and certainly no further away from me as soon as I talked it up. They didn't like to hear that, but it was reality. Besides, it's possible that I'll run into Anubis. And we all know what I'm going to do with this nice hot guy when I meet him. We laughed, because everyone here understood too well what I was trying to say. This jackal has always had a very strong attraction for me. It might be due to the mythology of ancient Egypt, to its very masculine appearance, or it might be a combination of both. I could not really explain why I had always been a fan of him, collecting figures and images that tried to represent him. Perhaps I liked him because he was quite similar to my protagonist Shenra. His portrayal was part of the inspiration for the most important of my protagonists. But it was strange, everyone here knew an Anubis, but basically no one knew a Shenra Gejaze. At best, my humor was a little over-sexualized, which is why I didn't want to talk further about my ideas about my demise and an encounter with a god. After more or less meaningless, everyday conversations, all four of them, as they sat across from me, suddenly started grinning and my mother said, "We've thought of something for you." "What?" I wanted to know. She sent one of my sisters out of the room and explained, "We all collected for you. Even your father added some." "What do you mean? You didn't buy anything, did you?" "I used to have enough stuffed animals," I scolded, because there was one thing I couldn't use right now, an emotional gift that I wouldn't have been able to take to the grave anyway. That made me a little angry, because I had never really wanted anything as a gift. I knew, however, that my mother in particular would not have let herself be dissuaded from making me happy. For a moment I remembered a very difficult time when she and I hated each other. She had not been good to me for the first few years of my life, but that changed over time. My mother changed from a woman I detested and who meant nothing to me, at some point to a kind of friend who knew everything about me, learned many things from me that she could never have imagined. Since she also had a difficult life, I respected her. When she got up, knelt down in front of my bed and said, "We've prepared something for you, my son," a lump formed in my throat. What did she mean? And what was this gesture about? "What have you been doing?" I asked, but they all just grinned wordlessly as the door opened and my sister, along with several caregivers, came back into the room. She carried a large, brown cardboard box and placed it on my lower legs with a joyful expression on her face. The box was longer than the bed was wide and, oddly enough, much lighter than it looked. "What is this? What's going on here?" I asked, because I didn't understand what it was all about. What were the caregivers doing here? Why was everyone rejoicing? The box was already slightly open and with a nodding gesture my mother indicated that I should look inside. I could not believe my eyes when I saw a large piece of fake fur in it. Next to it was actually the head of a sheepdog suit, a fur suit. I looked up and saw faces that looked as if their owners had just been released from an institution, so happy and content they seemed. Tears filled my eyes as I reached into the box and touched the suit's soft fur. But that's not possible. That was pricelessly expensive, I stammered. How long have you been planning this? But my mother seemed to ignore my questioning because she just cheerfully asked, "So, dress up?" She grinned like a honey cake horse and had her eyes wide open. My sisters agreed with her and said that I had wanted to wear such a costume for a long time. But they weren't quite right. I didn't like dressing up like a sheepdog, I wanted to be one. There was nothing I wanted more than to be Shenra Kesar Gejaze, an Alsatian as I had always imagined him. And so this dream was to come true, as realizable as it was in this world, on one of my last days on Earth. I started crying with joy, I don't know what to say. I was a little overwhelmed. How could I ever make up for that? You knew that I was not supposed to live much longer. You don't have to say anything about it, my mother said, gently straightening my upper body. The nurses understood immediately and hoisted me out of bed. They supported me while I stood upright and altogether helped me into the full bodysuit. It was very strenuous, for all of us. But it worked, and my mother carefully put on my furry sheepdog front paws. What I felt, I could not put into words. Again and again I touched the plush fur and noticed the noble and surely sinfully expensive workmanship of the suit. I breathed excitedly, speechless and powerless. I had almost done it, I just turned, felt before the eyes of the whole world, into an anthro. Better yet, I became a sheepdog. The shepherd dog. Chandra Kisar Gejays. I was crying with happiness the whole time and my relatives also had tears running down their faces. This was it, the most beautiful day of my life. As they helped me put on the hind paws that came with the suit, I said, "Please help me watch myself take the final step to becoming the real me." Immediately, the nurses helped me to stand in front of a full body mirror, into which I looked full of excitement and positive tension. I was almost complete, only one part was missing. Carefully and crying, my mother handed me the head, which was finally to complete me. I slowly put it on while being supported by two people and watching its descent onto my head in the mirror. It felt like a coronation. Napoleon himself wouldn't have done any better, quipped one orderly, causing the others to chuckle. Time seemed to stand still. My heart stopped beating. Everything was in the clear. Perfect. For the very first time in my life, I saw this beautiful, soft German shepherd in reality. I looked into his amber eyes and immediately recognized myself in them. What I saw there was me. I always wanted to be like that. Several times I had imagined this being, but I was not prepared to be it myself. Whoever made him, however you know how I imagined him, I had no idea how beautiful he really is, I said and heard my voice, which sounded no different than usual, but felt completely different. Then my emotions burst out of me. Immediately I started crying and kept shouting thank you, thank you. It was inconceivable, incomprehensible, and I could not stop looking at myself in the mirror. This would never have happened to me in my human form, because I had never liked my appearance. But now I was no longer human, because I was me, finally. Again and again, the groomers gently turned me so that I could also look at the rest of my new body. I finally had a proper tail, prick ears and looked just like I always wanted to be. My mother stroked my plush shoulder, looked in the mirror standing next to me and said, "Now you've got it, son. And we've also worked out that you can keep this on when the time comes for you too. You know." I understood, she didn't want to say it openly, but I was to be burned at the end of my time in this suit. Just as I had always wanted, even though it had long been dismissed as a crackpot idea and I thought it was unfeasible. At that moment I knew again why I had given myself my name. Chandra Gejays, which meant, the one who honors the mother and is of the earth. She had understood me very late in my life, but then completely. A few minutes passed before they told me that I should rather lie down again. After all, it had all just been very exhausting. I couldn't deny that and thereupon had them undress me again and put me to bed. I was the happiest person in the world right now, and I almost forgot that I was about to leave here forever. This thought occurred to me when they helped me to take off my suit again. So I had arrived back in the harsh reality. When I die, I want to be him, I whispered when the orderlies had left. My mother nodded in agreement, "You will, I promise. It's all settled then." My sisters and she sat with me for a while and we talked. I now told them about the fact that my psychologist had listened to my story the day before. "He'll probably turn all this into a book," I said. "That's good." My mother motivated me and wanted to know why I hadn't started with it much earlier. I thought for a moment. That was a very good question. Why had I waited until the end to tell people about the Vulpes Lupus Canis, the idea of my three spirits? I knew the answer, but I just shook my pale head. "We don't talk about that. It's nice that the psychologist was there and stayed until the end," I said firmly. Suddenly, a severe cramp in my stomach area set in again. That damn tumor was serious. I doubled over and my siblings were shocked and worried at the same time. But the problem quickly dissolved and one of my sisters asked if she should call an orderly. I said no and then said, "But it's better if you go home. I am tired. In a few hours the solar eclipse will begin. You don't want to miss it, do you? Why don't we stay here and watch it together?" my youngest sister suggested. "No, I'll be asleep anyway and won't see any of it. You'd better go home. You can make a video. I can watch it later," I blocked. They were understanding, which was convenient for me because it would avoid a lengthy discussion, I thought. Besides, I knew what they could not know. I felt that there was no way I would live to see tonight, because something was happening in my body. But I didn't want to tell them about it, but rather let them believe that everything was fine and life would go on as usual, at least in the near future. Okay, son, have a good rest then. I'll call you tomorrow, okay? My mother offered. I nodded and watched as she smiled and gently placed the German Shepherd's head on my nightstand next to the vase of flowers so that he would continually look at me. I want to thank you guys. I know I can never make it up to you, I said, ashamed, but they all made statements like it wasn't necessary and that everything was already right. Platitudes, again. After a brief farewell and a few heartfelt hugs, they left. But I couldn't shake the feeling that my mother also sensed that this was to be the last time she saw me alive. The whole time she was struggling with tears and trying not to let a sad mood arise. Admittedly, she did that brilliantly. Sometimes people had to play something for you so that there could be some peace. Then they were gone, and I was alone again. But now it did not bother me. Finally, this artificial sheepdog looked at me. The head was a very good job. I was happy, because I knew that I would be able to wear it again at the latest when I had breathed my last. Again, I looked out of the window. According to some nurses, it should be 3 hours until the solar eclipse. I already thought I would miss it, because I was so tired again. But I had one consolation: I looked at the soft head on the night console again and knew, everything was all right. I had never before, in my entire life, dreamed of any of my protagonists, had never met any of them in my sleep. But now, after revealing my story to someone, after seeing an image of my dearest sheepdog, it happened. I dreamed of Chenra Gejays. In this dream I was at home and lying in my bed. It was as if I had never been sick. Around me, I perceived a room that did not exist in my reality. However, I felt a pleasant feeling, was at home. This place was not strange to me and it seemed as if I knew it for a very long time. I also realized that I was not alone in the white, warm sheets. When I blinked, I perceived a large, fur-clad body. Never would I have dreamed it. But lying next to me, with his back turned to me, was Chenra. I smiled contentedly after blinking in amazement several times at first. Was I already dead? Was this heaven? Then I thought, never mind. Just enjoy it while it lasts. So I reached around his body and felt the fur of his warm chest with my hand. I stroked him tenderly and felt a heartbeat, slow, strong and calm. A canine sigh sounded. He was alive. Just as I felt right now, alive. My love really existed and now I had finally arrived to it. When I had admitted my deep affection for Chenra, even writing a whole book for him, I thought every day about what it would be like to lie next to him, safe, protected and free. Far away from the human world, we would be able to go anywhere and live a life as a couple. No one would be able to stop us anymore. I looked at my bare hand sinking into his fur and understood how different he and I were, despite our sameness, our bodies, our spirits, even our masculinities. Everything was different about him. And yet I loved him, perhaps for that very reason. But more important was the difference that could not be seen. He was Kesar, the sovereign, graceful, free, self-confident and masculine. And I was just a naked person, leaning against his strong body seeking protection, full of fear of this evil world. I always felt weak, vulnerable and inferior, until that very moment when I realized that he complimented me wonderfully and wanted me to be exactly the same. He's sleeping again, Amarok said, and Joliad nodded. The two males stood the whole time, unseen by me, on the other side of my bed and had witnessed everything that had already happened today. He looks just like Chenra, the wolf marveled, looking dumbfounded at the suit head. That's right. It's a great piece of work. It's beautiful, Joliad agreed. Well, Amarok then sighed, it's very nice that they granted him this great wish. It's a pity he won't be able to enjoy that fulfillment much longer, I think. A sad nod from the fox followed and they both looked thoughtfully in my direction while I lay there, asleep and unaware of the presence of my two protagonists. What should we do now? What about Chenra? Asked the fox. We'll wait until the eclipse occurs. If we don't get sucked into some kind of light then, I don't know. Mused his wolf. He slowly walked up to the suit's head and poked his artificial nose with a finger. Seems almost creepy to see a head standing in space like that, he flatted. Joliad laughed softly, you again now. After quite a while I opened my eyes and they were startled. I looked at the alarm clock on the bedside table and realized that I had slept for almost 3 hours. Dazzled, I looked out the window and saw that the moon was already about to move in front of the sun. So, I was fabulously lucky. It was still a few minutes before the total eclipse would occur. Outside it was already dusky and the birds were singing their evening melodies in the middle of the day. I stared out, spellbound, and could make out some people in the backyard who had put on these special goggles. I hadn't bought any, because I was the least worried about my eyes now. There it was, the moon, and slowly pushed itself in front of the sun disk, covering it more and more. Half, three quarters, a few seconds remained until the total eclipse. I opened my eyes while it became darker and darker outside. Fascinated, I watched as the two celestial bodies kissed, embraced, and finally overlapped completely, and it became almost pitch black outside. "Madness," I said aloud to myself, when suddenly more voices sounded in my room. A loud wow sounded and I was startled. I turned around and was stunned to see that three figures were in my room and standing next to my bed. Chenro was also now in the room, which pleased Joliad and Amarok. "There you are." In fact, my protagonists were standing next to me and looking right at me. "Can you see us?" asked Kakodaz in amazement. "Yes, I can see you. Joliad, Amarok, Chenro," I opened. They were all overwhelmed and Amarok wanted to know how this could be possible. But I only replied, "I don't know, but now you are all here, the fox, the wolf and the dog, Vulpes Lupus Canis. And our gods kiss each other." Joliad whispered, looking out the window again, as did his companions, Aram and Arya. Amarok continued, "Samo and Jaja." And Chenro concluded, "All sat in Ianaya. They had obviously understood and so I joyfully added, Sun and Moon. It all fits. We are all one, and now we are all together, united." I smiled exhaustedly and was glad that my boys were with me. It seemed almost time, the end was coming. The end of my time had come. So I waved the three Anthros to me with a hand gesture and they all smiled, as I did. We were in agreement, understood what was to come now, the farewell. The fox, the wolf and the dog embraced me at the same time and we hugged each other tightly. The timing coincided with the climax of our deity's kiss. We all started crying and I felt their different coats on my cheeks. I smelled their scents and felt that their three hearts were beating as one, slowly, strongly, uniformly. "Oh, my babies," I cried. Amarok sniffled and Joliad had his eyelids pressed together while Chenro whimpered softly. I spoke to them in a good whisper, "Joliad, fox of faith. Aramarin, cunning and thoughtful. Amarok, wolf of love. Samoyden, strong and shrewd. Chenro, dog of hope. Alsatian, knowledgeable and wise. I love all three of you equally. I have always thought that you were fighting a battle for my favor in my mind. I was wrong, you were always there, all three of you, together. Now I have you all again. I love you. We love you too, father. Now we understand why we had to die," sobbed the sheepdog and Amarok's crying became louder. I continued, "But it was a great time, wasn't it?" Joliad nodded and had opened his eyes again. His face was drenched in tears and the friends squeezed me even harder, so that I felt that we were all shivering, although it was not cold in the room. I whimpered along with them and no one said anything more. Everything we had to say to each other had been said. Everything that was meant for the people, I had now told someone. So, we pressed our heads together and wept aloud until it felt to me as if the three Anthros were melting into me. It took only the blink of an eye and they were gone. All I could see were my arms forming a circle, as if they had just hugged and squeezed someone else. The sun was already partly visible again and outside it quickly became light again. It was a great sight to see how the darkness gave the light its rightful place again. So I lay there, face completely wet from my tears. I also felt moisture under my body. I didn't feel any pain and therefore hadn't noticed that I'd had a rectal bleed in the meantime. The tumor had burst and now it was only a matter of a few seconds until it would all be over. My life was coming to an end. But I had achieved everything I had ever dreamed of. I had told my story and was still able to say goodbye to my protagonists. I felt we were now all united. For the first time in my life, my mind was absolutely clear, ordered a new no fear. Moreover, I had worn a suit and had become, albeit briefly, Chenrogejase himself. Now I was Kesar, the sovereign. And now I was sovereign enough to accept my death. Yanapu, the Egyptian god of the dead, was now to get me and my friends all at once. It was thanks to Chenra's deal with him that I was able to finish the story. With this deal I could be satisfied and did not regret any part of the agreement. My blood dripped onto the cold floor. I could hear it and felt that my senses, feeling, hearing, seeing, were leaving me very slowly. It became gray around me and the sounds became dull. The first of three times that one breathed very deeply before dying escaped me and suddenly everything became very bright. The world was enveloped in a dazzling light and shone, but without blinding me. The second breathing and there formed before my smiling eyes a figure whose silhouette became clearer and clearer. Soon I looked into the magical eyes of my great idol, Chenrogejase, who this time showed himself to me alone, wanting to make it easier for me to walk. Trembling, I reached out my right hand to him, touched his chest and felt the soft fur, as before in my dream. He clasped my hand with his own and smiled lovingly, almost fatherly and understanding. The dog was not angry with me. Not after everything, on the contrary, the amber eyes shone and signaled me infinite love, security and approval. His body was warm, perfect and exactly as I had always dreamed it would be. Very clearly I felt the beating of his heart and all my thoughts left me, because nothing existed anymore, no time, no pain, no suffering. There was only him and me. The third and final exhale followed, and under the smile of that beautiful, godlike dog I loved so much, all my life, I said the last sentence of the Vulpes Lupus Canis, I knew it. The end.